You might like to open your Bible. You might like to open your Bible to Exodus and chapter 25. And as we finished the book of Jeremiah, and Jeremiah concludes what? Israel is put aside as the nation, and it's the times of the Gentiles. Now, as we did that, then, just keep in mind, the Old Testament, all the Old Testament is one like this, moving, pointing to the New Testament, to the outworking of history. So wherever you go, the New Old Testament is pointing this way. So therefore, we took Jeremiah's companions, Habakkuk and Ezekiel and Daniel, and we've been looking at there, because they're looking at Israel. They see Israel as Jeremiah does, and they're going through the experience that Jeremiah does. So therefore Israel, and therefore Israel has a lesson for us. We want to learn, well, what did they all come together to give us? Lots of wonderful information about the future. So therefore, as we did Habakkuk and each thing, so now we're looking at Ezekiel. And to see it, we aren't doing the whole book like we did Jeremiah, because we don't have enough months to do that. 48 chapters. Isaiah, Jeremiah was 52. So Israel is the nation, Deuteronomy chapter 4, to be God's vessel, God's nation, to show all the nations how to honor God. God is the rightful ruler. God is to be, his government is to be honored, and he is to be worshiped. Israel is to be a nation to demonstrate that. So, and here's Israel at the moment put aside. So, in doing that, here's Ezekiel. And Ezekiel's, each one of them are special. And so in Ezekiel, picking up to get us into that. And you can't have Israel representing God if God is missing. You have to have God to represent God. You can't do it by your lonesome. God has to be involved personally. And therefore, in order for Israel to be that nation among the nations, so therefore, God has to find his home smack dab in the middle of Israel. How does he do that? Exodus chapter 25, and you'd recall, if you would, in Exodus in chapter 25, in verse 17, and thou shalt make a mercy seat of pure gold. Exodus chapter 25. Verse 17, you're looking at the ark that goes in the tabernacle. And thou shalt make a mercy seat of pure gold, 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1.5 cubits shall be the breadth thereof. And thou shalt make 2 cherubim of gold, of beaten work, shall thou make them in the two ends of the mercy seat. In other words, the mercy seat on top of the ark has 2 cherubim looking at it. And verse 19, and make 1 cherub on the one end and the other cherub on the other end, even to the of the mercy seat shall you make the cherubim on the two ends thereof. And the cherubim shall be stretched forth their wings on high, covering the mercy seat with their wings. And their faces shall look one to another toward the mercy seat, shall the faces of the cherubim be. So, Here you got the ark and the mercy seat and the two cherubim angels looking down upon it, protecting it. Now, the purpose of the ark. And thou shalt put the mercy seat above upon the ark, and in the ark thou shalt put the testimony that I will give thee, and the purpose. And where I, and there, in that where that ark is, I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat, and from between the two cherubim, which are upon the ark of the testimony of all things which I give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. So, you're going to go, and God's going to go in his most wonderful way and demonstrate and show your kind of glory that's going to be there, fire by day, fire by night, and the cloud by day coming up over the ark to show all 2.5 million of them. Here's this big, you can imagine how much land they took for their tents, 2.5 million people. Wow. And God showed the cloud by day and the fire by night. God was in the middle of them. Now, having said that, now something else we want to know. God did, that's the temple. What about the temple? Over again, chapter 40. And in chapter 40, the tabernacle, which we just looked at for a second. In chapter 40, the tabernacle is ready, all finished, ready to be occupied. By whom? By God. Chapter 40, picking up, if I may, in verse, going to verse 34. I'll even read verse 33 for a little bit of context. And he reared up the court round about the tabernacle and the altar and set up the hanging of the court gate. So Moses finished the work. Then, when it was all finished, a cloud covered the tent of the congregation and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter into the tent of the congregation because the cloud abode there, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Now, God's wonderful, wonderful presence was made so they could see it. They could see. Otherwise, you can't see the invisible God. So God is going to demonstrate in a simple ark, but all of a sudden, that whole tent and everything in it becomes glorified in an awesome way. And you couldn't get in because God was there. Hang on to that. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, over to Deuteronomy and chapter 12. Deuteronomy and chapter 12. And if I may, chapter 12. Picking up, please, in verse 5. Now, what do we know? Before they cross the Jordan, and before they're leaving the wilderness, going to cross the Jordan River, and they're going to go into the land. Now, and God has a special place for this tabernacle that is among them. God is among them. Chapter 12, verse 5. But unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose out of all the tribes to put his name, there even unto his habitation shall you seek, and thither shall thou come. So you're going to go and look to God's wonderful person, sliding down to get in the light of the context, verse 11. Then there shall be a place which the Lord your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. Thither shall ye bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, and your heave offerings of your land, and all your choice vows which you vow unto the Lord. That's my special place. Verse 14. All right, well, I'm going to read verse 12, I guess. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, ye and your sons and your daughters and your manservants and your maidservants and the Levite that it would be within your, that is within your gate, for as much as you have, as he hath no part nor inheritance with you. Take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest. Just one place. Don't be all over New York City, Moscow. No. Just Jerusalem. Just that place. No other place. No other place, God? No other place. Now, so therefore, verse 14, or verse 13, take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest. Verse 14, but, contrast, in the place which the Lord shall choose, in one of thy tribes, there thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings, and there thou shalt do all that I command thee. Now, so God has a wonderful location for the tabernacle to become the temple in a most wonderful, wonderful way. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, here comes King Solomon, and God, he's given the blueprint like Moses, so they didn't have to worry about a blueprint. God gave the blueprint for the tabernacle. God gave the blueprint for the temple. Over to 1 Kings chapter 8. And in 1 Kings chapter 8, here's the dedication of Solomon's temple. Now, are we going to have the same thing? Let's see. 1 Kings chapter 8, going to verse 10 in the light of the context. And it come to pass that when the priests were come out of the holy place, that the cloud filled the house of the Lord, and cloud filled the house of the, verse 11, so that the priest could not stand to minister because of the cloud. What for? Because the glory of the Lord had filled the house of the Lord. The glory of God. God was there. God is, God's person is glorious, and God gloriously filled the place. And so all they could do is look and honor the presence of God. Now, because they can't, presence of God, hang on. Now, over to 1 Kings chapter 8, and when this, they get Jeremiah's day, they get divided, and the Assyrian captivity, the Babylonian captivity, and Israel is no more in the land as a nation. 1 Kings chapter 8, picking up if I can, God has had prepared and told them what to do. When Jerusalem is leveled by Nebuchadnezzar, the city burned, the temple gone, I'm going to tell you what to do before it even happens. So, chapter 8 and in verse 26. And now, O God of Israel, let thy word, I pray thee, be verified, which thou speakest unto thy servant David my father. But, verse 27, but will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain him, contain thee. How much less this house that I have builded. Here's the temple, great temple, Solomon's. But the temple is just a little building like this building. And how do we contain God? You can't. So, picking up if I can, in verse 28, yet thou hast respect unto the prayer of thy servant and to thy supplication, his supplication. O Lord, my God, to hearken unto the cry and to the prayer which thy servant prayeth before thee today. Let thine eyes be be open toward this house night and day, even to the place of which thou hast said, my name shall be there, that thou mayest hearken unto the prayer which thy servant shall make toward this place. I want you to know, and thus, verse 30, and hearken thou to the supplication of thy servant and to thy people Israel when they shall pray toward this place. They're scattered all over the world, but they're to understand Jerusalem is the place, and they're looking for Jerusalem, the peace in Jerusalem and of in Jerusalem. Verse 30. Of whom they shall pray to this place, and hear thou in heaven thy dwelling place, and when thou hearest, forgive. So God, they're going to understand, God has a wonderful, wonderful place, and that's Jerusalem. But God, you've just leveled, let Nebuchadnezzar level the city and level the temple. There's nothing there, nothing there. So having got that, the temple's gone. Where's God? I'm looking out the window. I don't see God. I don't see the place. What happened, God? You're gone. I know. Ezekiel chapter 1. And then Ezekiel in chapter 1. Remember Ezekiel went into captivity in 597 BC, the second time Nebuchadnezzar came in. He has been in Jerusalem 5 years. He's been in Jerusalem. Now, at the age of 30, he begins. God takes him and prepares him to deliver the 48 chapters of the book of Ezekiel. So in the process of all of that, we pick it up. Ezekiel 1, verse 4. Ezekiel 1, 4. And I looked, and behold, the whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud, and a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the midst of thereof, as the color of amber, out of the midst of the fire. So, but to get a piece of information, you can notice in verse 4, a whirlwind comes out of the north. Now, you know that was the Nebuchadnezzar, but to lock it in, go back over, if I can, to Jeremiah in chapter 1. In Jeremiah and in chapter 1, and you will note, God told them Israel was going to be clobbered by that nation that came out of the north. So, when we come to Jeremiah in chapter 1 and in verse 12, this is to Jeremiah. Then said the Lord unto me, thou hast well said, seeing, for I will hasten my word to perform it. And the word of the Lord came unto me the second time, saying, what seest thou? And I said, I see a seething, boiling water, a boiling pot. And the face thereof is toward the north. Nebuchadnezzar is coming from the north, Babylon. Then the Lord said unto me, out of the north an evil shall break forth upon all the inhabitants of the land. For I will call all the families of the kingdom of the north, saith the Lord. And they shall come, and they shall set everyone his throne, at the entering of the gates of Jerusalem. In other words, the whole group of the enemy coming in is going to camp and be looking into the city, looking at the city of Jerusalem to defeat and conquer it. and against all the walls thereof. Verse 15, the end. Count about, round about, and against all the cities of Judah. Verse 16, and I will utter my judgments against them, touching all their wickedness, who have forsaken me, and have burned incense unto other gods, and worshiped the works of their own hands. So God is going to rightly judge Israel, no question about it. And God has been very patient, and now he's going to do what he does. So God, in your wonderful going, you're going to go and judge. And Israel, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to come from the north with others to judge Israel, to defeat and level the city and level the temple. God, you're going to be all gone. We can't see you. Ah, that's true, but not quite true. So therefore we come back over, if I can, to Ezekiel. In Ezekiel in chapter 1. And you will note, now, I titled this for John, the describing that which is indescribable. So, now God, you're going to let us understand about your wonderful person, how you are. It doesn't look like the enemy's coming. We're going to get clipped, and many are going to die, and the city's gone, temple's gone. But God, you're not gone. And who's behind Nebuchadnezzar coming? God, you're behind it. So therefore in verse 4 again, 1 and verse 4, and I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud and a fire enfolding itself with a brightness was about it, and out of the midst of the midst, amidst thereof, as the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. So we're going to come, and here God is going to go in his management, in his wonderful. Is God disappeared? No. God's busy, and he never abandons his management. So what's he doing? God is going to go, and his glorious person, and he is the God of creation, and his glorious person is what? Invisible. But how are we going to say the invisible God if we got rid of the temple, etc.? Well, we don't. Ah, but God didn't disappear, and God is going to help us poor human beings to understand. So here's Ezekiel, and Ezekiel is given a wonderful, wonderful movement. What's he going to do? Picking out, if I can, going to verse 5. Also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures, and this was their appearance, that they had the likeness of a man. Now hold your finger there for a moment in your mind and go over, if I can, to chapter 10 for a moment, because chapter 10 is going to use the same illustration again. Chapter 10 and verse 1. I'm looking at the living creatures. I'm trying to tag. I want to, living creatures. That's what they are, living beings. And chapter 10, verse 1, then I looked, and behold, in the firmament up above, as you'll see, that was above the head of the cherubims, there appeared over them, as it were, a sapphire stone, as the appearance of the likeness of a throne. And you'll notice the word in the middle of verse 1, cherubim. They're cherubims. What's on each side of the mercy seat? A cherubim looking down. What was Lucifer, son of the morning? What was his position before he became the devil? His position was like that. He stood. He had a special place. Of all the cherubim, he had a special place to look, to represent all of them. Wow. Now, so to go over one other place. You won't have any question. Verse 20. Chapter 10 and in verse 20. And you will notice, verse 20, chapter 10, this is the living creature that I saw under the God of Israel by the river Kibar, and I knew that they were the cherubims. So, here's Ezekiel, and he tagged them, which he's going to, because God is going to help him with this whole thing. Otherwise, he'd never even come close. So therefore, in Ezekiel chapter 1, God, what are we going to do? Well, in verse, picking up in verse 5, and you notice the four in verse 5, in the midst of thereof came the likeness of four living creatures, or cherubim, and this was their appearance, that they had the likeness of a man. So you're going to, here's the cherubim, and every one of them had four faces, and every one had four wings, and their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like the color of burnished brass or bronze. Or actually, there was a word back in that day for that country, in Ezekiel say, where they combined silver and gold to make it bright, brilliant. So, verse 8, and they had hands, they had the hands of a man under their wings, or on their four sides, and they had four, and they four had their faces and their wings. And verse 9, and their wings were joined one to another, and they turned not when they went everywhere straight forward. And the likeness of their faces, here's the four faces, had the face of a man. If you're looking, okay, hang on, I'll do it and then I'll redo it. Have the faces of a man. What do you know, God? What are you looking at? You're looking at dealing with humans on planet Earth. Is there any other place, God? No. He said, there's only one place that I have put people. So you don't have to think of Mars or Jupiter or anywhere else. I only put humans on planet Earth. So it's all about you judging humans who have violated and have turned away from allowing you to be the creator, the government, and to worship you. That's what we're doing. So now, you're judging, and you're bringing in a whirlwind, as you'll see, a whirlwind spinning, full, to pick it up in a minute, full of fire coming in. That's God. How are you coming in, God? Okay, here comes these four living cherubim, and on each one, on each one of those four, they had a face, the face of a man. Genesis 1, 26 and 27, God created man. That's right. It's all about God dealing with us humans on planet Earth. So, and therefore, face of a man, the face of a lion, the face of a lion. And in the process of that, and remember, the lion would be on the right side, and the lion is the king of the beast. And so that's the animal world in Genesis 1 and 124. And sliding over, and the face of a lion on the right side, and they had four, and they four had the face of an ox on the left side, domestic animals, Genesis 1:24, made them both wild and good, and otherwise, of ox on the left side. And in the back, they had the face of an eagle, the birds, the flying creatures, everything. God, you're telling me, here comes this moving chariot of the throne coming. And here are these four cherubim, here they are. And each cherubim has four faces. the guy in the front, the guy in the back, the guy in the left, the guy in the right. Each one of them have four. Each one, you would see a man, you would see a lion, you would see an ox, and you would see an eagle on each one. So I got four of them. So each cherubim has four faces. And then the four faces, each face has four wings. Four wings. So we're looking, and here comes the thing. Four wings. Four wings in each one of them. So that's 16 wings per thing. Four faces. Four times four is 16. Anyway, now, so we got that. And you got that? That's a total of 64. Because you go around. Now, and therefore, 64 wings on each. Each cherubim has 64 wings. And the four of them together would be 256 wings. Hang on to that thought. You won't get wings yet. You got to see the wings. So, here's the wings. Now, is awesome, awesome thing. Good. So here's the four faces. Four faces on each, and each face was four wings on each, and each face is four. The four wings are there, and as they go, they're there. They fly. They're flying. They're moving. They're moving together in unison. Think of a chariot with a throne on it. When the kings would come and travel, what did the kings do? The kings would ride in a special vehicle and be transported down the field, down through the jungle, whatever it is. They're transported. God, you're moving. He said, I am. I am moving. God, here's Ezekiel, and God, he's being overwhelmed. Overwhelmed. Now, here comes, keep going, so you see it. And in chapter 1 and in verse 6, likeness, if I read it all, it will be forever. You got the idea? You aren't going to remember any of this anyway. You may dream about it, if you can imagine it. Now, here's a wheel within a wheel. They're all there. So, chapter 1 and in verse 16. And the appearance of the wheels and their work was like the color of a beryl. Crystal light, like clear, like ice, glittering ice. And the appearance of the wheels were the work like the color of beryl. And they four had the same likeness and the same appearance and their words and their work. And it was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. So, here we are looking, and everything is identical. The four cherubim, all the wings, all the faces, all that's happening is one marvelous picture of God moving, coming down the corridor of time, supervising, moving on earth. He is omnipotent. He is omniscient. He is powerful. He sees everything. He knows everything. What are you doing? I'm helping you understand, said God. Ezekiel, you're not going to be able to finish this book unless you understand. Ezekiel chapter 1 prepares you to understand all of the wonderful things that Ezekiel is going to see. You have to understand God. Say, well, what is it? That's right. I don't see the temple. I don't see anything. God, where are you? You're invisible. Ah, that's true to your eyes, but not to the rest of the universe. God, you're there. You're here. Yes. Yes. How are you here? I am trying to tell you. I am here to save whosoever that would believe and to judge, which we're going to look at. To judge. That's, I'm going to judge the world. I'm going to come as a whirlwind like Nebuchadnezzar from the north. I'm going to come and I'm going to work through history and judge it in a most wonderful way. Who's going to judge it? And God said, I want you to pay attention to my throne chariot as I go through time. Ezekiel, are you seeing it? God, he said, I see it. And what kind of language God is trying to help you understand? It's everything. Keep going. You see it. There was a wheel within a wheel. And when they went upon their four sides. And they turned not when they went. So here's the wheels, four wheels. Here the four cherubim. Everything is there in a most wonderful way. Sliding down, if I can, just a little more. Verse 17, and when they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. Four, their rings. The word rings means rim, the rim of a wheel, the circumference of a bicycle wheel, the circumference around the wheel. So God, the wheels are all there. That, so the chariot never has to go, change the direction. What's going to happen over to the west, over to the north, over to the south? God never has to move. He never has to move. The chariot has four wheels, and they go in all the directions at once, and they can go anywhere, always straight. If they need to go over here, they go over here, they go over here, they go over here, they go backwards, they can go whatever they want. They're made. God is ever present. He doesn't have to move. Now, and therefore, and here's the rings, and they were, verse 18, and their rings, their rims, they were so high that they were dreadful. In other words, these things were so big. They were dreadful. They were awesome. What makes them even more awesome being big wheels with the four heads? What makes this so awesome? And in the end, verse 18, and they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes round about them four. So all each of the rims with all the four heads are full of eyes. Eyes with wings, all there looking. So whenever you look, they're looking at you with how many eyes? Unknown. Just huge wheels, full of eyes, looking, seeing everything, understanding everything, able to cope with anything. God. Vision. Wow. And God said, I thought you were, I didn't know whether you could help me today, God. See, God, I don't know if you can help me today. See? Sort of funny. Yeah. Funny. So having said that, and keeping that in mind, so the wheels go, and they go in whatever direction they need. Whatever God needs to do, he does it in a most wonderful, wonderful way. So the rings, the rims, the circumference, full of eyes, there they are, and that's awesome, awesome, awesome. God's wonderful, wonderful power, his awesome power. So here's God's personal management taking place as you keep reading. And he's going to go and has the chariot and picking up in verse 17, 18, 19, and the project he's going to do. And it's moving in a wonderful way. And it's going to end up that chariot is going to be responding. Well, I don't want to get ahead, but you'll catch it. Here's the firmament up here, and the chariots here with the cherubim, commanding. God, whatever you want us looking, whatever you want to do, we're here to go. Whatever you need to do, God. The angels are at his command. And over the angels, this chariot, is the firmament, an expanse. And on the expanse is a throne, a sapphire stone, the sapphire stone. But when you have to understand, when you look at the sapphire stone, you see a throne. When you look at this throne on the sapphire stone, what do you see when you look at the stone? What are you looking at the stone? You see a man. You see a man on a throne, on a stone. the appearance. What do you know about God? You know, hang on a sec, over to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 4. Exodus chapter 20. And you will note, in God's wonderful grace, God, you're going to go. And picking up, if I may, in verse 4, 24, Exodus, the Ten Commandments. And note, please, verse 4, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, that is in the earth beneath, or is in the water under the earth. No likeness. When you read Ezekiel chapter 1, you, at your leisure, if you want, count the number of times likeness is used. Everything's like something, but it isn't, because there's no way to explain it. He said, I tried to help you, said Ezekiel. I don't know. I had to use English. I have no words. I have no words to tell you. All I could do is try to explain it to you. It was awesome. That's right. It was a likeness. God is not like anything, like a sapphire stone. All you saw was a man. You saw God helping you understand, like in Ezekiel, like in Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah, looking at the temple, sees the temple filled with the glory of God. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1. And God was still in charge. But when you come to Ezekiel, God is leaving the temple. He's disappearing, leaving his temple. And he's not going to be there. Not going to be in the temple. No. So now, having said that and keeping that in mind, and if you like, over in chapter 40 of Isaiah on your way back, Isaiah in chapter 40, and you will note, and in chapter 40, picking up, if I may, if you can, chapter 40, And would you note, chapter 40, and picking up if I can, in the light of that, God, what are you going to do? So, chapter 40, and in verse, I can't go from 39 to 40. Chapter 40, picking up if I can, chapter 40, verse 18. To whom, then, will you liken me? Or what likeness will you compare unto him? As you keep reading, we make all kinds of things to be like God. Sliding over to verse 25. To whom, then, will you liken me? Or shall I be equal, saith the Holy One? There is nothing like me. I'm the Creator. So, God, what are you doing? You're trying to help Ezekiel understand that even though, like in Isaiah, he's still there supervising, temple's still up, he's still supervising, but when Ezekiel comes along, he isn't going to be there. No, he's not going to be there. So Israel, what are you going to do? Ezekiel's going to see an empty place. That's what he's going to see. And God, you can't liken. So what are we? God, you disappeared. No. Here's the chariot. Here's the throne chariot with all of its awesomeness. Underneath, looking up to God and on his throne. What do you see? Nothing, God. Ah, but there's still a man on the throne. It looks like God disappeared and God doesn't care. about me and my life. Ah, but there's still a man. And there's the chariot. And there it is. There's the man. God, the Son of Man, on the throne. You thought he disappeared, but he's in charge. And that chariot, that cherubim, that marvelous vehicles, and whatever else there is. Wow, God, you're still in charge. I am. When it looks like everything's terribly, terribly bad, you're still in charge. Yep, I'm still there. Still there, yep, no matter what. So therefore, God, here we are looking. As you go, and human history has to work it out, and all 48 chapters, how do you know they'll all work? Because God said, I tried to help Ezekiel as he begins. I'm going to keep showing him what I'm going to do with Israel, with Gog and Magog and Russia. I'm going to show him what I'm going to do. I'm going to show him how I'm going to do it. That's what I'm going to show him. And he's going to be able to help you. He'll write it down for me. Write it down. Yep. Ezekiel, wow, he had an experience. Wow, not all of them have that experience. Everyone has to have a sense of God, a rightly sense of a personal God in a personal way. Otherwise, you aren't going to do anything. If you don't have a sense of a personal God in a personal way, tell me where you're going to go. All that God does is because you sense his wonderful presence. And when you don't sense it or know it or understand it, then it's just you and your thoughts. And there's no reality to it. And we go to church and do all these things, but there's no reality to it. I need reality. I can't have make-believe. Make-believe is lousy. I hate make-believe. I hate it as a boy. Make-believe. Make-believe. No. And I didn't like the little song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Bluebirds Fly. Yeah, I believe that God, the God, way beyond whatever, rainbow, way beyond that. Yeah, God, that's the God. Ezekiel, you need to understand. So therefore, here's the awesome power that God gives to us. And now, Ezekiel. Now, there's no one else that I know of on earth going to be in time that will ever see and understand in the same way Ezekiel did. So you say, boy, he had something. He did. But here we are, and we're way ahead of Ezekiel. Why is that? When you receive Christ as your Savior, God, you can't see God. He's invisible. That's why the chariot and everything, to try to help you understand God is still God, though you can't see him. God said, you can't hide from me. I'm everywhere. How do you see everywhere at once? Now, if you're going to have a silly illustration, here's 2 trillion galaxies. Okay? Now, I want you to look up at the sky and get yourself a good telescope. See? And even if you get the Hubble and the new one, John Webb or whatever it is up there, and you get that telescope and you can read and look. We shared these different, I shared them with you, showed you pictures. So you don't believe it. They said, here's this galaxy, and they got them, and it's 3,000 light years away. Now, how far can you see? A light year is what, 6,000 miles? 1,000, whatever it is, light year, 6 million miles. Well, you can't. God, we can't, no. But God, because in God's saving grace, God became a man born in Bethlehem of Judea. For what reason? Ezekiel? No. So that when you see him, you will see God Then the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld, John 14, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. And we're going to find our home in your heart. But a chariot. Chariot's nothing. It's my presence in your life. That's what it makes. You're my little thing. The church right now, the believing heart is his tabernacle. And where does he belong? In the tabernacle. What's he doing in the tabernacle? He's glorifying himself. And all we have to do is learn to enjoy and exercise that relationship, simply. And here comes Ezekiel with his awesome relationship. And what do? I say, wow. I read that. I didn't help you. Did you remember all that? The wheels, the inner wheels, the four faces, and the four faces had 256 wings. And the wings, when they made noise, you couldn't hear anything. And the angels, The angels went what? And the angels' wings covered their face, covered their bodies. And they did that without reading it again. And they did that before. When God spoke, when their wings were going all around, you couldn't hear. It was awesome, dreadful, awesome. But when God spoke, their wings were folded and their eyes covered. God was speaking to the prophets and they became quiet as he spoke. And then they expressed themselves in power. Well,